Welcome to Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. With me is Phil Condon. How are you doing there?
Good afternoon, Phil.
So today we're going to talk to Christopher Black, who is a, as you listeners of this show will know, is a lawyer who practiced before the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda and also for that of Yugoslavia. And he has issues with the, you might say, the offshoot of that, those ad hoc courts, the International Criminal Court. And wouldn't it be nice if we had an international criminal court and not an international criminal court? There's been a kind of a shocking development, which is not surprisingly either unreported here, and we're going to go into that with Christopher Black. Later in the show, with Stephen Gowans at 5:30 will be talking about the war on terror and the strange directions it has taken. You will know to what I am referring, even if you are in Prague. But I want to thank you very much, by the way. We had many supporters for the show, for the station, and always feel free to go to CIUT.fm and contribute and become a member, keeping this great station on the air. I believe we are joined by the man himself, Christopher Black. Are you there?
Right, I'm here. How are you doing?
Very good, Chris. Thank you for talking to us. There's been a lot of excitement in the front pages for people like yourself who practice international law. And we want to ask you, because there is this one that isn't being reported, but really should get the scrutiny, particularly of people who care about this phenomena of international law, where we now have a court in the Hague with this great title, and so far, as we've said in interviews with you previous, it seems in about 10 years or 8 years, I forget how many years of existence, the only people brought before that court have been African defendants.
Right.
And they have at the moment a rather, certainly a celebrated name, Jean-Pierre Bemba.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been occasional sparks off that trial, which has caused people to scratch their head trying to understand what the case about Mr. Bemba is.
Mm-hmm.
But there's been a development which largely ignored. One of his counsel has been charged and actually incarcerated at The Hague. Am I right? Could you tell us the story?
Yeah, actually, there were 5 people connected with the defense team. The lead counsel was arrested. The case manager is also a lawyer, was arrested, and
can I ask you right there, who the heck arrested him?
Well, that's interesting. They were arrested on the order of a judge named Tarfusa, who was former Italian prosecutor, on the basis of information supplied to him by the registrar and the prosecutor, alleging that these defense counsel were attempting to suborn perjury and bribe witnesses.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what the information they say they're acting on were illegal wiretaps or intercepts of phone calls, supposedly confidential phone calls between the prisoners, Bemba, who is a prisoner, in the prison and the council. They're supposed to be
within the prison.
Right, they were tapping the phone calls, which are supposed to be confidential.
Tapping the phone call of the lawyer to his client or some.
Right.
The law team.
So they then, based on the...
By the way, I'm really sorry to break in on you, Chris, but I just can't resist. I mean, who authorized the wiretap?
No one. That was just done by the registry, apparently, on their own decision.
Lawyers in Toronto ought to be warned, I guess, that the registrar of Toronto courts might be tapping your phones.
Right.
Yeah.
it's crazy because they were all, based on what they alleged they found in there, they then authorized the further wiretapping of these counsel and Bemba himself with conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And in November of 2013, an arrest warrant was put out, secret arrest warrant for all of them, and they were picked up at various times just after that, December 2013, and thrown in prison.
I seem to recall, and help me with this, because, I do think maybe we were talking to you about it, it was some stirring, because at the time of the arrest, wasn't he arrested in England?
One fellow was arrested in England, one was arrested in Paris, one in Belgium, one in the Congo. They were living in various places.
One man was actually in the Congo when he was arrested on the authority of the registrar at the...
He was arrested by local police at 2 o'clock in the morning. They were burst into his house when they were sleeping. They didn't even wait for the daytime. They just...
How long has he been what we call a criminal lawyer?
I'm not familiar with how long he's been. I think he's been a lawyer for quite a long time, Mr. Mekololo.
Are all these people Africans?
Yes, they're all
Congolese. White people were charged?
They're all Congolese, except for one person who might be from Central African Republic.
Mm-hmm. Now, for clarity, also, are they members of the team led by Mr. Jean Flem?
They were the defense team for Mr. Bemba.
Mr. Bemba.
And now one of the members of that, one of the persons that's being charged, one of the lawyers being charged, named Kabongo Maganda, is represented by Jean Flem, the Belgian lawyer.
I see.
But the rest have other counsel.
Yeah. Flem himself hasn't been charged.
No, although he has faced some pressure, I understand, through certain channels.
He's done his best, but
they
won't.
He's done his best, yeah. He's put up a strong fight because our information is that, in fact, there's a video online, an ICC video was posted of the initial appearance of all these lawyers and others who were of the team who were arrested, on their initial appearance. And in that, the defense lawyer mentioned the fact that the real reason for the arrest was that the defense team themselves had discovered that the 100 witnesses, of the many witnesses the prosecution said they had, many of them had recanted and come to the defense and told them they had been bribed to give false testimony against Bemba.
Oh, my God.
And they had a proof of a letter written to the Secretary General of the United Nations, the prosecutor, the president of the ICC, from one or more of these witnesses stating that, asking, where's the money we were promised for this false testimony? We were promised this and we were promised that. We're not getting it. And they complained. Ben Suda apparently hid that letter, and the defense found out about that letter. It's just after they found that letter, they were all arrested.
So that letter, was that investigated itself? In other words, it was a letter to the prosecutor saying, where's my money?
To the prosecutor and to the Secretary General of the UN also.
And nobody tapped the prosecutor's phones.
No, well, we don't know who's controlling them.
Yeah,
but
I guess I shouldn't. Yeah, presume.
Yeah, so they... So in the conversation, my information is that in the conversations between the defense counsel and Bemba and his team, they were discussing having the prosecutors charged with bribing witnesses and supporting perjury and obstruction of justice. Mm. And then it came out that they actually found one of these letters that Ben Suda had before, proving that they were right. And it was after that that they demanded the recall of this witness to make them, they were then all arrested.
That's when they got arrested.
So it looks to an outside observer like the prosecution was afraid of these facts coming out. And now they've arrested all these defense counsel and these team members. And now, of course, they say these things. They say, well, of course they're going to say that because we charged them first.
Yeah, well, that's a nice theory, except that given what they used to call equality of arms, the prosecutor is not necessarily... innocent or full of virtue, right?
No, and Jean Flem has insisted that Ben Suda the prosecutor has a great, big conflict of interest. How can they lay these charges when the evidence is that they themselves were the subject of an investigation by the defense?
Mm-hmm.
And they are the prosecutor on the Bemba case. What's odd about this is that there's no independent police force arresting these people, charging them, as you would say in Toronto, if somebody was supporting perjury, the police would go in and make an arrest.
Mm-hmm.
Not the prosecutor. Yes. Wouldn't go around arresting defense counsel.
Yeah,
and normally in a trial, if you suspect one side is bribing, you wait for the trial and you come out, you got proof, which you call the witness and you destroy the witness and destroy the counsel at the same time with proof of that in the court, in the trial itself.
Mm-hmm.
You don't arrest the counsel. I mean,
except they do. And actually, now we ought to express some sympathy here. We have a counsel not proven guilty of anything who was incarcerated. Was it one or more than one that was being held for something? Was it 8 months?
Five people.
Five?
So there was the lead defense counsel. His case manager is also a lawyer.
8 months at The Hague,
right, and,
on an accusation.
And somebody else involved in the case, and an assistant to Bemba and somebody, another witness or something. So, yeah, 8 months, and the charges, I understand, are still not being confirmed.
They're not confirmed.
No, there's no charges against them.
There is no charge.
Now, they were just suddenly released.
What century are we working in here, right?
Exactly. And then they were released.
This is apparently pre-habeas corpus. This would be, I forget which king is in charge of this case.
Right. And a Russian lawyer brought to my attention, I was in Greece a couple of weeks ago, was brought to my attention by an international lawyer there. He's like, did you notice that all these lawyers who were thrown in prison were the only lawyers privately paid at the ICC?
Uh-huh.
So it's a message that they don't want privately paid lawyers. They want lawyers they can control.
I think that's
they're not welcome. Anybody else is not welcome.
That
was a distinct message because everybody's thinking this also.
Well, it does strike me. And by the way, again, now just to show, I mean, we have been following this issue, and a lot of people put up the caution flags, as you have done on this show and other venues, that there's a kind of religion going on here of international criminal justice and what a marvelous thing it is. And apparently it's a kind of virginal exercise where no one can question the motives or intentions of anybody because right. It sounds so nice.
Yeah.
Except that when you describe it, it's quite grisly and medieval almost.
Right.
And to add to that, let's talk about this. One of the five was released and not allowed to go home because the country to which he was, where his home is, wouldn't have him?
Yeah, there's another suspicious action taking place. The judges, surprisingly, just decided to release them on the 21st of October, a few days ago.
Mm-hmm.
And probably because I would think that if they keep them in, they're going to have a trial at some point. If they release them, there'll never be a trial. These charges will just hang over them, their careers are ruined, and nothing will ever take place.
Yeah, the vague accusations in the air, release him, but they didn't give him a new court date or any appearance date?
No, there's been no other public hearings in the last 8 months. There have been private hearings between the judges and the prosecutor and an independent counsel appointed by the judges who works for the judges, but the defense are not allowed to be there. They have no idea what's going on.
Does Ban Ki-moon know about this?
I would think so. Anyway, back to this guy.
Sorry to be sarcastic.
Who's been detained. They ordered the release of all of them, but four of them were released immediately from the prison at The Hague and then went back to Belgium and France. But the fifth person, Kibongo, who resides in the U.K., in Britain, with his family, who are refugees there, he's been residing there for several years and has a visa to enter Britain. His release was delayed inexplicably for several hours, for a day. And then on the 22nd, the British issued a letter, a notice to him saying his visa had been suspended. So he could not, because he'd been arrested.
Uh-huh.
There goes the British sense of fair play and justice about...
And that there was a charge over his head.
A charge, but no...
Tampering.
Yeah. So he now can't go back to rejoin his family. He can't go back to the Congo. The Dutch don't want him in Holland, and nobody else wants him.
By the way, why can't he be in Holland?
The Dutch refused to take him.
The defense counsel at the famous tribunal can't stay in Holland because the Dutch don't want him.
Right. So he's now still in prison because he's got nowhere to go.
Where are all these countries that love the ICC and built it for us and it told us all to bow and to say what a marvelous institution?
Mm-hmm.
Where are they all on the phone to Holland saying, well, of course you have to. He's a defense counsel. Don't you understand justice?
Well, no, and the presumption of innocence, where is that? And where do the British...
I think it's in the same grave with habeas corpus.
Yeah. and this goes along with just last week, the prosecutor of the ICC was complaining about Kenyatta in Kenya, President Kenyatta. His people were releasing confidential information about the hearings, which are really public.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, for the British, it was quite clear that the prosecutor must have released information to the British immigration people the day that the order was signed, and then delayed his release until they got the letter so he could not be released. There's no doubt that happened.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so there's collusion between the prosecutor and the British government for political, some reasons. Why?
Yes.
And what was... So, in fact, the prosecutor and the British have stymied the judge's order to release them.
Yeah, as a kind of a way to get out from under a problem.
Right.
You know, Chris, from practicing law at the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, where you very ably defended General Ndendelimana, one of the few people to escape Africa and get home to his family, that all kinds of curious things go on at these courts, which under ordinary scrutiny, you know, transparency, don't happen. You recall, and there was the case of the young man who was Louise Arbour had ordered arrested in Nairobi, turned out to be the wrong man.
Right.
But they kept him until the Red Cross came and said, who do you have here? And they, the day before the Red Cross came for the scheduled appointment, they said, take him back to Nairobi.
Right.
The Red Cross are coming. I mean,
That happens, you know, all the time.
We need to talk about those things. I mean,
well, that's interesting because you may not notice, but the two prosecutors on the Bemba case and on this case, or the defense lawyers for Bemba, are two ICTR prosecutors, Ben Suda, of course, and James Stewart, who is involved in denying Prime Minister Kambanda a trial.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So you can see what's going on.
It is not a healthy situation. By the way, you're the expert on this. I mean, they ought to consult you because your client was cleared, eventually, totally, of all charges, and remained, though, in this kind of limbo, which seems to be the same situation now occurring with these folks at The Hague,
where
somebody is able to make a decision and keep them from returning to the freedom which is theirs, which is they want it fair and square. In the case of these lawyers, they're guilty of nothing. No one's shown in a courtroom that they did anything wrong.
Right.
And yet, their future is quite in doubt. I mean, actually, what you describe in the case of the man who can't go back to his family in London, it sounds like another limbo situation for which there's no legal answer.
Solution. That's right, because where do you go for a solution? The British said in their notice there's no appeal from this decision.
I noticed that note. And by the way, I hope that's online somewhere. I'm doing our listeners a disservice. If these things can be found.
Perhaps they can post it on your site.
Thank you very much. I think I'll take you up on that. But, I mean, isn't this bizarre? I mean, that, by the way, is not a secret letter. This is what they sent to him as an explanation why he, a lawyer, in good standing, cannot return to his home. And then they add the note, you can't appeal this.
And you can't appeal this. So how can he ever rejoin his family who's living in Britain? How can he ever work? He can't go back. He can't go anywhere. And he's stuck in, he can't step outside the prison.
By the way, where is Mr. Bemba?
Mr. Bemba's still in prison.
Mr. Bemba never tried to hide from anybody. He was
It's quite clear that that is also political. Like all the Africans charges for political reasons. Kenyatta, they wanted to not let him be president. Gbagbo, he won the elections, but they overthrew him. And Bemba claims he won the elections in 2006 in Congo, and then became a senator. I'm told that the main reason he's kept there is that he has a hope of winning the elections in 2016.
Why wouldn't he? I mean, by the way, we've talked about this. I mean, Africans are becoming rather fed up with white Europeans holding them and giving them no rights at all while slandering their names. And meanwhile, they are political figures with popular followings in their countries.
Yeah, and if you look at the Bemba case, it's quite clear that he was originally charged by the Central African Republic in 2002, but nothing was done about it. Until 2007, suddenly Ocampo takes up the case because, of course, in 2006, he claims he won the election. Kabila is fighting, and then Bemba cedes the position. Okay, I don't want any more fighting. I will accept it. You rule. But then he's forced out of the country, and shortly after that, the ICC arrests him.
Bemba,
that takes care of a problem for Kabila.
Yes, and by the way, Bemba did a Charles Taylor. He said, okay, I don't want to fight about this.
Exactly.
I'm going to go abroad.
Right.
He didn't, by the way, urge anybody to violently resist. He said, I accept this is the best way to solve this.
That's exactly right.
And then somehow this ICC got in a machine, landed on him.
Yeah.
And he hasn't been shown in a courtroom to have done anything either.
No, if you read the arrest warrant, which sets out the, which was available on the ICC website, it's very vague. It's allegations of he was asked to send some soldiers in to put help put down a rebellion by a fellow in Central African Republic on behalf of the president. So he sent some troops to Libya and sent them in, like 300 men. And there was some fighting for 5 months. The rebellion was put down, and this guy's come home.
Mm-hmm.
And then when that regime is overthrown, the rebels, who then become the government, accuse Bemba of being a war criminal, of course.
So it's
all political. I mean, the ICC is being used as a political tool. And
overthrow
regimes. But, well, actually, it was very well put by somebody in Greece that we should stop using the word regime change. We should start talking about what's really going on, overthrowing legitimate governments.
Yes.
When they're considered not legitimate by the West, they're called regimes, but when they're in their favor, they're called government.
Yeah, what Chomsky calls non-cooperating government.
Well, non-cooperating government is a regime.
Yeah, it's a regime,
exactly.
And it must be overthrown.
It must be overthrown.
Yeah, yes, that's right. If you're an elected president, the Toronto Star will call you a regime.
Yes.
If you are a monarch, they will call you Your Highness.
Yes. basically right.
Yeah. Now, by the way, you have an ally here, not that she's a friend of yours, but Carla Del Ponte was herself a prosecutor.
Right.
And you've seen the BBC documentary, which is making the rounds, BBC
yeah.
2. I'm sorry they didn't interview you, but it's still not bad.
Yeah.
And Carla Del Ponte, I haven't seen her challenged on this point. She said she met with Ban Ki-moon, who was apologetic that she was being removed following a conversation with the president of Rwanda, who said, "You're going to be fired."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
And so she went to Ban Ki-moon. I wonder what she thought was going to happen. But he said, "Well, you know, Carla, it's politics."
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, you know, that has been your point in the courtroom. And others have said the same, but they want to always say, "Oh no, no, this is strictly this is a criminal matter." But I mean, at this stage, the ICC, before it gets a lot worse, people are going to have to face the fact that it is, yes, indeed, it is a very political.
Well, that's the thing. I think that's why these men were arrested, because if it came out, as I'm told it would come out, that the prosecution were engaged on a massive scale in attempting to bribe witnesses to give false testimony against the accused, in other words, to fix them up, frame them up,
mm-hmm.
he would have destroyed, I think, completely the reputation of the ICC, whatever left of it.
Mm-hmm.
But now that's still lingering over it, but it's also very dangerous because it sends a signal to defense counsel that you better not practice here.
Yeah. Yes. Don't come here and be a lawyer.
No,
you're going to get in trouble.
You end up in prison.
If you come here to worship it as a church,
yes.
and to have your picture taken with the judge and the prosecutor, though mm-hmm. they will not invite you to their meetings, you're welcome to be here.
Right. Now, that's basically what's happening.
Would you tell us the story of Judge Sow? I don't know how to pronounce his name.
Mm.
But that was another moment that told us about this tribunal. The ICC. That was a Sierra Leone ad hoc court, but it tells us something about the
function. Well, that came up also in discussion recently again with some people. When Charles Taylor was convicted, the judges had announced the statement of conviction, the judgment. There were four judges. There was an alternate judge in case one of the judges got sick. There was another judge who always sat in on the hearings to replace the sick judge if there was one. They gave their judgment, and he asked to take the microphone. They attempted to cut him off. He began speaking anyway, and the people in the courtroom heard him say that, as far as he was concerned, there was no evidence whatsoever against Charles Taylor. And he could not understand why the other judges convicted him of anything. He said, "I heard no evidence that he did anything wrong whatsoever."
And the diligent media of the West went to go see him, didn't they, and report that?
Oh, yeah. So everybody's aware of that.
No, I think not.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and in fact, his statement, somebody posted on YouTube, it caught him actually saying, you could hear still what he was saying, but the person who captured it on a cell phone, I think.
I think we should tell folks that at these tribunals, they have curtains, and if you say the wrong thing, it's curtains.
Yeah, that happened in our trial often when sensitive, embarrassing information was going to come out in the trial, they would the prosecution asked for a closed session so it couldn't be public.
Mm-hmm.
And that often happened where information would come out about what the West was really doing, say in the case in Rwanda, what really happened.
Mm-hmm.
And what had really gone down. Suddenly the judge would say, okay, we're having a closed session now. Yep. We'd say, why are we doing that? This is, the public should be aware of all this. Well, no, sit down, be quiet. It's going to be a closed session. And so you can't report, you can't write about those closed sessions there. You're ordered not to.
Yeah. I'm a witness to sitting in the courtroom in Arusha to when they first put in the curtains.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And it was during a lunch break. And they were only about half done when the judges returned. And Judge Gama said, what is all this?
Mm-hmm.
And he was answered by Mr. Stewart about how they had decided for the protection of witnesses they should probably have curtains. And the judge said, well, tell us next time when you want to do these things.
Oh, so the prosecution, I wasn't even aware of that myself. The prosecutor, Jim Stewart, was behind that.
Yeah. I thought it was a comic moment.
I still remember James Stewart, when Prime Minister Kambanda was at his hearing asking for a trial and saying he'd been tricked into signing a document which they said was a confession, which he denied was, and which got him life in prison. He said, I was tricked into signing this document. I was held incommunicado for 9 months by Canadian police when I won a trial. He's the Prime Minister of Rwanda. You think that people would want him to have a trial?
This is supposed to be the one.
He's the one. He's the man in charge. You must have a trial of this guy if you say he's guilty. No. All James Stewart did was said, repeatedly, did you sign that document? Yes, I did, but you guys tricked me. You guys tortured me. That's only James Stewart would say, did you sign the document?
Yeah. Well, I can recall the spirit of an old friend of ours, Charles Roach. When that occurred, I just happened to be in the office with him, and Charles Roach said, "You should, given the magnitude of the offense, no judge should ever accept a guilty plea.
No.
That, there should be a test of the evidence because of the magnitude, the importance of it.
Exactly.
You should say, no, we're going to make it a not guilty. We want to know what happened.
Exactly. And Kambanda was saying, none of these things you're saying happened.
And by the way, how many people know that he walked into the courtroom of Colonel Bagasora? And did he come into your case? I don't remember. But he came into some other cases to tell his story as a witness.
We had a letter from him, which we obtained in 2003, which we filed as an exhibit, setting out what happened. And it was not a confession, it was a statement. That the RPF was responsible for everything, not him, not his government.
Yeah.
But he wasn't allowed to testify in that trial.
And he is still on the website there, claimed as the first great accomplishment of that tribunal.
Right. Although I understand he has a book out, but I don't know how he got a book out, but I tried to order it on Amazon. And I ordered it, but then they tell me it's not available, so I'm not sure.
See, we're learning as we go. I can tell you what I know about that book. He had a text before arrival in Arusha, so he might have updated it.
Okay.
But I can tell that I do know that. And his story would be certainly worth a serious investigation. If the BBC is looking for a new job, I'd tell them, go and do the Kambanda story. If you want to understand...
Yeah, exactly.
The evolution of this whole
and talking to Bemba and paying attention to this, I don't think the British press that I'm aware of has picked up this case of this lawyer being banned from Britain and banned from separated from his family. That's a major human rights issue as well as and an attack on the defense bar. I mean, on defense lawyers and lawyers generally.
Yeah, and by the way, it does underline why the African Union, I think that's the present title of it, is quite right to say. There should be no cooperation if there's going to be this African-centric prosecution and mistreatment and a denial of rights to Africans and their counsel.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, Christopher Black, it's always great to talk to you. It's been very informative, and once again, our regards to you and your client for being among the few to escape Devil's Island.
Yes, he's very happy to be back in Belgium. He was met by Colonel Marshall and various other dignitaries.
That
was very good.
That's a heartening story.
They may be working on something.
Wait, tell him to write a book. Thank you very, very much.
Okay, you're welcome.
Bye-bye. That's Christopher Black. And you're listening to the Taylor Report. This is CIUT 89.5 FM. Please do something about this criminal court. Why don't we ask our members of parliament, why does Canada give any money to that? You know, it doesn't exist, it doesn't operate on fumes. Somebody is fueling that exercise, and there ought to be some standards. And we ought to be hearing from Minister of Justice, perhaps, or certainly maybe the Justice Critic, certainly Minister of anybody involved in foreign affairs. Why is the ICC tapping the phones of defense lawyers and incarcerating them for 8 months? They happen to be the black defense lawyers, and then releasing them without any charge. The question is, what kind of a show is this? And I do personally think it is a show trial when you have curtains. See, that's my people talk about the expression show trial. It's definitely a show trial when you have curtains.